Thank you. Good. Thank you, Kelly. Find yourself singing the songs throughout the week that we sing here in worship. Those are good ones to take with us, aren't they? End of the week. Thank you so much. 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 1 through 16, or 1 through 15, excuse me. 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 1 through 15. And if you find it in the Pew Bible, would you yell out the page? First Kings is harder to find than Genesis, isn't it? First Kings 3. Say it out loud.
263.
Thank you. You got that? Good. While you're finding that, we're going to do a mini Foothill Has Left the Building this afternoon. There's a need at Foothill Vista. Hazel has some maps. I'm going to be meeting with any that would like to pull some weeds and trim some shrubs at 1 o'clock in the entry of Foothill Vista. That'll give you time to, some of you maybe you didn't plan on it, would like to go home, get changed, maybe grab a hamburger. But 1 o'clock at the entrance of Foothill Vista, it's one mobile home area that needs some work done on it. So we'll be pulling weeds and trimming some brush there, 1 o'clock. Also, just to... as I already indicated, there's some bulletin changes in you. I've alerted you to those already. 1 Kings chapter 3, I'm going to read verses 1 through 15. Solomon made a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem. The people were sacrificing at the high places, however, because no house had yet been built for the name of the Lord. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David. Only he sacrificed and offered incense at the high places. The king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the principal high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I should give you." And Solomon said, "You've shown great and steadfast love to your servant, my father David, because he walked before you in faithfulness, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart toward you. And you have kept for him this great and steadfast love, and have given him a son to sit on his throne today. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, although I am only a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of the people whom you have chosen, a great people, so numerous they cannot be numbered or counted. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, able to discern between good and evil. For who can govern this great people?" It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. God said to him, "Because you have asked this, and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right, I now do according to your word. Indeed, I will give you a wise and discerning mind. No one like you has been before you, and no one like you shall arise after you. I give you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor all your life. No other king shall compare with you. If you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your life." Then Solomon awoke. It had been a dream. He came to Jerusalem, where he stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. He offered up burnt offerings and offerings of well-being and provided a feast for all his servants. The word of the Lord. When I drive by billboards that say Lotto 30 million, Powerball 360 million, yada yada 47,000 billion. Do you do what I do? I imagine, what would I do if I had $30 million and let myself in the next few miles down the 605 reflect? I'd always start with, I'd pay off any of my kids' school bills yet. And then second would be, I'd buy a brand new Ford F-150. And then I think, do I need a brand new Ford F-150? The one I have works. Why would I do that? And then I remember that most people who win the lotto, their lives end up in worse shape than they were before they won the lotto. So I think I'd try to give it all away. So who would I give it to? Or have you wondered if you found that lamp like Aladdin and you rubbed it and the genie came out and said you have three wishes, what your first two would be? I know what the third one would be. Three more wishes. Let's keep this thing going, shall we? This is this a cheesy way to get into this story here? Yeah, it is. This is God asking Solomon in verse 5, ask whatever you wish. And Solomon responds in verse 9 with, I want a hearing heart. The translations will vary. A discerning mind, I want wisdom. But literally a hearing heart. A heart that not just hears, but implicit in the word is obey as well. I want to hear so that I can do what you want me to do. Solomon recognized in this text that he's in over his head. And so he needed help from outside, a hearing heart. Our purpose when we gather Sunday after Sunday and in small group Bible studies and in adult ed, Sunday school classes, is to remember the God stories so that we know how to live fully in the present, but not just remember, but so that we can live fully in the present and so that we can have hope for the future. That's what we're going to do this morning, unpack this God story. And then try and bring it up to where we are. And if you have your sermon outline, you'll see I've got three places where I want us to land. I'm going to conclude with a rather extended story of my sister as someone who has a hearing heart, my sister Anne. So let's look at the passage. This week from Beacon Hill, the Nazarene Publishing House, the new Beacon Bible Commentary came out, 1 and 2 Kings, a commentary in the Wesleyan tradition. It was written by Karen Strand Winslow. Congratulations. Several years of hard work. So I didn't have to go far to figure out what this was supposed to be saying. So I'm going to stick pretty close to what Karen has said. Congratulations. This is a commentary that would be worth... This commentary series is readable. You can get it. And I like the way it's laid out. The phrase that you have in your worship or in your outline comes from this commentary. The context: God works with the results of muddled and fractious transactions. I like it when scholars take time and put phrases together. God works with the results of muddled and fractious transactions. And if you're here last Sunday, we talked about Jacob, the flawed character. We could paraphrase that. God works with flawed people. He works with muddled and fractious transactions. Let's notice them as we set the context for this story. If you have your Bible open, look back to chapter 2 and notice that chapter 2 is not G-rated. Might be mature audience rated. At least it's R-rated. What you find is a whole lot of muddled and fractious stuff going on. In verse 25 of chapter 2, what Solomon is doing is following his father's orders to sort of clean up things. David was maybe a little bit chicken to do it himself, and so he says as he's dying, Solomon, you have to take care of some things. So in chapter 2, verse 25, who gets killed? Adonijah, right? Solomon sent Benaiah, and he struck down Adonijah, and he died. Look at verse 27. You have another guy getting killed. Who is this one? Oh, he banished. He just banishes Abiathar and kill him. Verse 34, you have Joab. He flees to the tent of the Lord and thinks that by being by the altar, he'll be spared. But in verse 34, he's not spared, so Joab gets it. And then poor old Shimei, I think that's she... Shimei, verse 36 following, but verse 46, he gets the axe too. And so the end of the chapter, so the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Quite a way to establish a kingdom, isn't it? I talk about muddled. Well, the muddling continues, or dark clouds in chapter 3, verse 1. If you're familiar with the Old Testament at all, God had made it clear, don't marry foreign wives. So what's Pharaoh, what's Solomon doing? He's marrying Pharaoh, foreign wife. So verse 2, you get some more of this dark cloud. The people were sacrificing at the high places, however. So kind of an accommodation, but not maybe not the best. Chapter 3, verse 3, you have a but or an only. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statue of his father David, but or only he sacrificed and offered incense at the high places. So things weren't totally copacetic, maybe really pleasing to the Lord. So this muddledness and this fractiousness, maybe, I'm guessing, this is why Solomon asked for wisdom, because he realized he was in this kind of a situation and he would need help from outside if he was to govern these people. And so you have this theophany. Okay, big word, but it's good to learn a new word every day, isn't it? A new fact every day and a new word every day. Theo, God, phany, appearing, God showing up, God appearing. And the Bible is full of them. The Old Testament particularly is full of God walking with Adam in the cool of the day, God appearing to Abraham. Last week we looked at God appearing to Jacob in a dream. Here God is appearing in a dream. You have it through the prophets. You have it in the New Testament. The book of Acts is one God appearing after, or the one God appearing time and time and time again in visions and dreams. A theophany is just God appearing, and you've all had them. Every one of you, if we were to eat lunch together later on and I were to ask you, where has God showed up in your life? You would be able to dust one off or bring one up real quick. This is a time when God showed up in my life. So this is nothing new, no big deal. It just happens to be a word we use, a theophany, God appearing. And so God appears, and in verse 5 says to Solomon, ask what I should give you. And Solomon responds with some history and reviews the fact that he's in over his head in governing these people. And he makes it clear that he's just a child. I asked Karen, is this just a euphemism? Maybe he's 25 or 30, but he's saying, no, I'm just a child. No, he probably is just a child and doesn't know exit from entrance sign, goes in at the wrong door. So he's a young little guy maybe, perhaps. But God is asking this question. And so in verse 9, he says he's aware of the fact that he's in over his head, and he asks for this hearing heart, literally hearing heart, a heart that, the very core, I want to know what you're up to, God. I want to know what your thoughts are. And the implication is more than just an implication. I'll hear it, and then I'll do something about it. I'll act on it. I'll obey. So hearing in Hebrew means to obey as well. And you see a so that following verse 9, so that I know how to govern this people. So that I know how to dispense justice. And look at God's response. In verse 10, it says, it pleased the Lord. Now, we talk often about what you'd like on your tombstone. I wouldn't mind that. Here lies Dale Winslow, born, died. He pleased the Lord. Wouldn't you like that? Wouldn't you like to think that when God reflects on you, a big smile crosses his face? This kind of ask pleased the Lord. And the Lord's response, like it would be any loving parent, is, okay, not only will I give you what you ask for, I'll give you this hearing heart, but I'm going to give you the other things that a king would need as well, riches and honor, and I'm going to give you a long life. You didn't ask for these, but because you asked for the most important thing first, I have confidence that if I give you these things, you'll be able to manage them wisely. Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom, seek it first. And when you seek first the kingdom, there's confidence in the Trinity that we'll be good managers of all of these other things that he gives us. If we seek these first, then I think the Trinity gets a little nervous. But if we seek this first, a hearing heart, there's confidence from the Trinity. Yeah, I can trust you. Now, when you follow this, and maybe some of your Bibles will have a break here after verse 15, verse 16, you have Solomon fleshing out this request. The story, it's a familiar story. These two prostitutes sleeping together. They got their babies in bed with them. One of them rolls over on one of the babies, and it dies in the middle of the night. Wake up, there's only one live baby. What do? These two prostitutes come to Solomon with this live baby and tell the story, and they both say it's our baby. Solomon says, bring a sword, we'll cut the baby in half, and each of you get a half. Well, the mother of the baby, the true mother of the baby, says, no, give the baby to the other woman. And the woman who was not the mother said, yeah, that's just, cut it in half, that'll be fine. Solomon, then using this hearing heart says, okay, the baby belongs to the woman who wants the baby to live. And look at the end of the chapter, verse 28. I'll read it. All Israel heard of the judgment that the king had rendered, and they stood in awe of the king, because they perceived that the wisdom of God was in him to execute justice. The very thing that the king wanted, now he's getting from outside, and he's able to execute the kind of justice that that he knows that he needs to be able to execute in this sort of muddled and fractious sort of kingship that he has inherited. Well, I want to make three comments from this. First of all, if we're bringing this up to the present, and you see in your outline, keep your theophanies dusted off. It's easy to have experiences with God and not write them down, or to let them get tucked away in the box in the bottom left-hand corner of our closet. It's important to keep your theophanies dusted off, because oftentimes they're seldom this kind of theophany. They'll come all the time. But when they come, they're direction-setting theophanies. And it's important to be reminded routinely of those. I have a friend that dusted one off for me at one point. I had a theophany where God spoke clearly to me and said, I want you to be a pastor, not just a pastor, but a pastor in the Free Methodist Church. And at one point, when things got gnarly, which is what they do every week, I was opining to a friend that I was thinking about leaving the Free Methodist Church. Of course, other churches would be easier to pastor, right? We all know that. The grass is always greener over there. And Eric Duncan, reminded me, yeah, but what about that vision that you had? It put an end to my questioning. Of course, I had a theophany, and God said, this is where I want you. Stay here. So I don't have to wonder anymore. If things get tough or it looks better over there, I had a theophany. I have another friend who has forgotten his theophanies. He and I get together regularly, and he, if you looked at his life, doesn't look like he's living anything like you would expect a Christian to live. And when we get together and he explains to me why he's walked away from faith, I remind him of his theophanies, because he's had several. And he'll sit in a restaurant, Flappy Jack's, and not just cry, but tears streaming down his cheeks, and embarrassed when the waitress comes by and says, do you want more water? But he is remembering the times when God did show up, and he can't argue them down. He can't say, wow, that was bad pizza, because he knows it wasn't. It was God showing up. Keep your theophanies dusted off. Keep them on the table. Keep them on the mantle. And read them, refer to them. In my journal, when I have them, I'll use that yellow highlighter. So when I flip back through my journal, I don't have to look real hard. This is when God spoke. This is when God showed up. And they build faith and they build hope. Second, I hope I can communicate this, and I'll try. Think before God about your if-thens. Verse 14, let me read it again. If you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your life. Then I will bless you. Then I will favor you. Keep those if-thens before the Lord. Use them. Use your the thens, the favor that you've been experiencing. Think about, remember the favor that God has bestowed on you, and constantly bring it before the Lord in an attitude of thanks, gratitude. Just reading a recent magazine came to our house this week, and the science of being thankful, what goes on in your brain chemistry when you are thankful. And in fact, the article says the single most important thing about life, and it's to be thankful, to deliberately remember the thens, but also the ifs. Lord, I know that you're not a sugar daddy. You're not a computer that if I enter certain data, I'll get $500,000 in cash. This is a relational thing. I understand that. But I want you to know how grateful I am for all the thens that you have bestowed on me. And in our first world, we ought to find it hard to complain. You know that list of first world problems? I was reminded of it this week when I got groceries. 103 degrees. I had to make two trips out to the car. Oh, how terrible my life is. And the sun was hot, and I'd left my sunglasses inside. Oh, me, oh, my, how difficult life is. I had to make two trips. Think before God about your if then. He's a loving parent. He delights to give good gifts to his children. Psalm 103, forget none of his benefits. Remember those. And then third, give your servant a hearing heart. I want you to listen in on a phone conversation I have with my sister this week. We were at the coast, the Oregon coast, for a reunion a couple of weeks ago. And one evening, we asked the question around the group, apart from your spouse, your children, or your grandchildren, if you have any of that, what is the one thing that you're most concerned about? What is the one thing that you care most about? And several shared. My sister Anne shared, and she said, I care most about, or the thing I'm most concerned about, is that I hear from God, that I hear God. Now, we're in a, and she unpacked that a little bit, but she's aware that this is a very private, deep kind of thing, so she didn't go into a lot of detail. And I thought afterwards, it was the last night we were there, so I wish she'd have said it earlier so I could have, you know, walked down the beach with her and had her unpack it. So I purposed to call her and ask for more unpacking of that. Didn't do it until yesterday. I'm putting the final touches on this sermon, and I thought she's wants exactly what Solomon wanted, a hearing heart. So I called her. She just got in from a run. She runs 4 miles three times a week, my little sister. And she just got in from a run. And I said, you have some time. Can you unpack that? And she said, yeah. Would you listen in to this phone conversation that we had? She said, living out of a hearing heart takes practice. And she quoted James chapter 1. She said, I don't want to be like something that's tossed by every wave. I believe that God does speak, and when he speaks, I want to act like it is God speaking and not let waves of unbelief toss me around, but accept and expect that it is God speaking. And then she said, my new grandmother, whenever I have to babysit Darby, granddaughter, I'm always asking God for wisdom. And I believe that the ideas that come when I don't know what to do are from him. I believe they're God answering my desires to hear what he has to say, that it is God. And then she said again, but it takes practice. She said, it's important that I obey quickly. If I overthink it, I tend to not do it because there's always ways to deconstruct what God has said. And I'll find myself looking at, now that must not be God, or that's too difficult. But it's important, she said, that in practicing this, that I obey quickly. I said, have there been times in your life, Anne, when you knew it was God speaking, but then you found out that it wasn't? She said, oh, yeah. Some time ago, they were in a deep financial hole, and her husband had applied for a job that would have been a good job, good security. And she felt like the Lord spoke to her and said, he will get this job. But he didn't get the job. She said, I went through a period of time, about 6 to 8 months, where I doubted that I was hearing from the Lord, and I doubted that my very sort of philosophical base was wrong, that God doesn't speak clearly, and that I can't know what God has to say. Or I wouldn't have misread or misheard God. She said it took about 6 to 8 months, and I found that I wasn't trusting God in that 6 to 8 months anymore. But then somewhere near the end of that 6 to 8 months, the voice of the Lord came back and said, notice that your husband has gotten a job, and it's a better job than the one that he applied for. And notice that in that 6 to 8 months, I have been taking care of you. I have been providing for you. You paid every bill. You had enough food on the table. I was providing for you. I said, what did that do for you? She said, what it's done for me is it's made me pray, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. I recognize there's always this bit of, is this really God or not? And when I hear you, Lord, I want you to help me have clarity, help my unbelief. And then she said, I love God. I love God so much, and I want to communicate with God. And I do hear him every day. But I know that when I talk like that, it sounds ostentatious. It sounds like I'm some kind of spiritual snob when I talk to people that way. And so I tend to keep it private and not let people know how I go about my spirituality. And we talked about casting pearls before swine and that kind of thing. You know, it's not that they're swine, it's that swine don't have any use for pearls, so they trample them. And so sometimes when you share deep stuff with people and there's you realize that didn't work. You have to be careful when you share stuff that's really deep like that, don't you? But then again, she said, this is the third time she said it, it takes practice to do this. I said, Anne, was there a time in your life where you set this course, or did you just kind of gradually grow into it? She said, no. And real quick, she said, when I was 13, I was at a camp, and she named the three of her best friends that were at the camp with her. And she said there was a preacher, he was from England, I don't remember what he said, but there was an altar call to come to the altar and pray, and I went to the altar. She said, I've been to the altar several times. She was raised a Free Methodist. You go and get saved every week in a Free Methodist church. So she'd been to the altar a ton of times, but this was different. She said, this time, as a 13-year-old, I remember deciding that I was going to go all in, 100%, no matter what. I was going to serve God with all my heart. There have been ups and downs, but that was the turning point for me when I was 13. And then she said, but I need to tell you that it's been the last years that have been the best. The last 10 years have been my favorite, where this relationship has developed and it's gotten sweeter and sweeter. I reflected with her on that. Kids leaving home, what, you got more time to yourself, a lot more peace in the home. I don't know all that. Who knows? But it's been the last 10 years that have been her favorite. I said, if I were to shadow you, Anne, would I be able to notice in the day when you sort of plug in with God to get these words or this have this conversation? She said, no. Oh, yeah, I read the Bible and pray every morning, and I journal like everybody else, she said. But it normally happens in the daily events of the day. In the daily unfolding of the day. She said, yesterday I went out to take care of the cows. They have Black Angus, some beef cattle that they're raising to make sure that the feed was okay. And on the way out, I'm talking to God. She said, I hate her. And she named the woman that, I hate her. She didn't hate. Man couldn't hate anything. But she said, I'm having trouble with this woman, God. What do you want to do about it? And she said, as walking out and as I'm feeding the cows, God's given me some ways that I can love her and some attitude changes. And so he's talking to me about this whole relational thing that I got going where I'm sideways with another woman. And then she said, let me tell you what happened during Lent a couple of years ago. She said, I came into Lent and I thought, oh, God, I don't want to give up TV and chocolate again. I do that every Lent. I'm not gonna give up TV and chocolate this Lent. Do you have something else for me to do this Lent? And she said, the Lord spoke clearly and said, I want you to work on your relationship with your husband. So for the next couple of days, she had got some notions together, you know, make sure that I fix his favorite meals and fold his underwear properly or something, huh? Whatever you do to fix your relationship with your husband. And the Lord said, that's not what I mean. And so for the next few days, she unpacked with the Lord, what do you mean? And God said clearly, I want you to be more yourself with your husband during Lent. What does that mean? That means I want you to be honest with your husband during Lent. That means that I don't want you to keep inside the things that you know you should speak or who you are. And then she said, for instance, if Vaden wants to go to Sonic for a hamburger and I want to go to Applebee's, say it. That kind of simple honesty. And then she said, you can't believe what has happened to our relationship since then and in that 40 days. She said, God gave me words and attitudes and ways of living with my husband, and it was God's power, and it was a miracle that Lent. I said, was it just a 40-day hiccup and then you went back to be? No, it's carried on. In the last 2 years, our marriage has been better than ever. I asked Anne if I could share this with you, and she said, go ahead. I told her that it's on our web, and she's going to listen to it Tuesday, and I I said, get back to me if I misspoke, okay, and I'll clear it up the next Sunday. But I think I've been as faithful to the conversation as I could be. The people that know my sister feel the same, that she's the kind of person that would sort of come right up next to Solomon and say, yeah, I hear that kind of ask. I want a hearing heart. And the Lord has honored her with that. And so, give your servant a hearing heart. We respond to the scriptures that we sing and respond to the preaching with prayer here at Foothill Church. Quiet. I ask you to be quiet in a few moments. We respond. You can respond at the altar. It may be that this morning you're the 13-year-old and God is asking you to make a turn and to ask that question of the Lord. This is what I want more than anything else. I want a hearing heart. So as we are given several different opportunities for prayer, would you keep that prayer in your frontal lobe? God, grant your servant a hearing heart. Amen. Let's take some moments of quiet to reflect. And then Gail is going to come and lead us in the prayers of the people and peace.